This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhi in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's a bit mixed, to be honest. When you look at Pierre Nkurunziza, I think what he represented during his reign was really the Bush generation that fought during the Burundian Civil War.
That's a political analyst on the death of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza, who has been accused for years of carrying out serious human rights violations. Details coming up also. Darfur militia leader Ali Kushab has surrendered to the International Criminal Court. And South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is facing widespread criticism for his speech calling for justice and equality for African Americans. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza, who died yesterday at 56, has been accused for years of carrying out serious human rights violations against his own people, including killings and forced disappearances. Burundian political analyst Thierry Uwamahoro told VOA's Jason Patinkin that Nkurunziza's sudden death leaves the families of victims without the possibility of finding justice.
It's a bit mixed, to be honest. When you look at Pierre Nkurunziza, I think what he represented during his reign was really the Bush generation that fought during the Burundian Civil War. That was a scar generation that came into power after Burundi's troubled post-colonial era. So that's a bit mixed. But then what we also see is that Nkurunziza was not able to unite, to keep the party united during the 2015 political crisis. So there was an attempted coup d'etat in 2015. Nkurunziza decided to try for a contested third term, which he won. Then the rest of his reign was characterized by human rights violations. So a lot of people had to flee the country. Civil society actors were unable to act. International media and national media found it very difficult to operate. So that really divided and scarred the country. But then on the other hand, you can also see that at the end of his term, he was willing to step down. So in January, his party, the CNDD-FDD, elected a new candidate for the presidential elections, Evariste, who was indeed elected 2 weeks ago in the elections. And that showed that Nkurunziza, and that's why we can say it's a bit of a mixed legacy, because despite what happened before, he seemed willing to step down in the end.
And now looking forward, he was already going to be leaving power, but he wasn't going to be leaving entirely. Now that he has passed away, what impact might that have on the political situation in Burundi?
Yeah, I think that's a bit too soon to tell. He was indeed supposed to leave office on the 21st of August. Now what we see is that there will be the president of the National Assembly will be president at interim. So in this period between the elections and the new president, Evariste, assuming office, it is interesting to see how things will develop over the past few months, over the coming few months, yes. But Nkurunziza, indeed, he was supposed to become the supreme guide of patriotism, meaning that most people expected him to remain influential despite a new president assuming office. It remains to be seen what happens next.
That was Burundian political analyst Thierry Uwamahoro talking with VOA's Jason Patinkin. Darfur militia leader Ali Kushab has surrendered to the International Criminal Court to face charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The ICC issued an arrest warrant for Kushab in 2007 accusing him of persecution, murder, and rape in Darfur in 2003 and 2004. Prosecutors say he commanded thousands of Janjaweed militia from August 2003 until March 2004. He is charged with implementing the counterinsurgency strategy of Sudan's government that resulted in war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. Sudanese political analyst Abdul Monim Himat says Kushab's arrest gives hope to the victims of war crimes in Darfur and their families that justice will be served. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir and his former defense minister, state minister for interior, and a rebel commander were indicted years ago by the ICC, but have yet to be turned over to the court. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is facing widespread criticism for his speech calling for justice and equality for African Americans after the death of George Floyd in police custody. Many in the country say Ramaphosa and other South African leaders have long ignored police brutality at home. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
In the United States, our black brothers and sisters have embarked on a massive fight to reclaim their dignity.
A few days ago, Ramaphosa made this televised address, saying the killing of George Floyd had opened wounds in a country that had been oppressed for decades by white supremacist rule.
These are the wounds that our brothers and sisters in the United States live with day in, day out, week in and week out, year in and year out.
Since then, South Africans of all races and political persuasions have condemned the president for what they say is hypocrisy. On social media, they've screamed, "What about our wounds? What about Collins Khoza?" Police allegedly beat Khoza to death in April for violating COVID-19 lockdown regulations. Ramaphosa's African National Congress has been in power for a quarter century, but it has done little to curb police brutality and impunity, and officers are rarely prosecuted or convicted for deaths. This media footage shows police officers using batons to club an unarmed protester, 33-year-old Andries Tatane, in the town of Ficksburg in 2011. A shot rings out. Tatane, wounded in the chest, collapses and dies. Seven policemen were charged with his murder, but acquitted. A year later, in what's known as the Marikana massacre, police shot and killed almost 40 demonstrators at a mine near the town of Rustenburg, while media recorded the incident. At the time, Ramaphosa was a senior member of the mine's board. In the days leading up to the shootings, workers attacked several police officers. Ramaphosa then told the police to take concomitant action against protesters. Human rights groups wanted him to face criminal charges, but that's never happened. The president has denied he was inciting the police to kill. At a rally, the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, Julius Malema, said the protests and calls for police reform in the U.S. are important. He says, however, that Ramaphosa and the ANC are abusing it and ignoring their own people's suffering at the hands of police.
The treatment of black people with dignity must start here in Africa. When you support the killing of your own fellow black brothers and sisters here in South Africa, and have some useless hashtag on social media, Black Lives Matters. That is a narrowness.
The criticism from all quarters has prompted Ramaphosa to make another televised statement. He condemned the unjustified use of violence by South African security forces.
The death of Collins Khoza and 10 other South Africans reportedly at the hands of our security forces during COVID-19 is something that I deeply regret. I regret it because as we imposed the lockdown, I specifically spoke to our security forces and said that they must go out amongst our people with love.
But Malema said one of the major roots of the problem was blacks not loving themselves. He criticized his compatriots for shouting about what he called racist police brutality in America, yet also attacking black African migrants in South Africa.
If you loved this face, this black face, while you are about to burn a Zimbabwean and seeing the tears of a black African fellow crying for his or her life, you will see yourself and stop it immediately.
South Africa has seen periodic outbursts of xenophobic violence over the past few years, with some fatal attacks on migrants from other African countries. Attackers have said the migrants are taking jobs in a country that has an unemployment rate of nearly 30%. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
69 people are dead after jihadists linked to the Islamic State group attacked a village in northeast Nigeria. The French news agency AFP says the fighters are believed to be from the Islamic State West Africa province faction. They shot and ran over residents with vehicles in the remote village of Fello yesterday. Local leaders said earlier the attack could have been in reprisal for the killing of jihadists by a community self-defense group formed to stop cattle thefts. Northeast Nigeria has been wracked by a decade-long Islamist insurgency that has left 36,000 dead and some 2 million displaced. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza, who died yesterday, has been accused of serious human rights violations against his own people. Darfur militia leader Ali Kushab has surrendered to the International Criminal Court. And South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa is facing widespread criticism for his speech calling for justice and equality for African Americans. Thank you for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. With Nigerian businesses struggling because of coronavirus lockdown measures, the use of mobile money and no-touch cashless transactions in business is growing rapidly. The use of mobile money grew by almost 15% in March, and experts say the practice is expected to become even more common as the pandemic continues. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Cashless payments only is an inscription at the entrance of Washmi Laundry in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Laundry manager Paul Gudia says it's a recent measure to limit physical contact with cash to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
There is different people that come from different places, and that money is the general acceptance, which is coming from different people and is circulating from different angles. It may be Mr. A have this disease, or Mr. B have this disease. So in the process of circulating this money, it can definitely come to me and it will affect me.
With more businesses like this Abuja Laundry switching to payment technology to ensure health and safety during the coronavirus pandemic, the mobile money industry is experiencing significant growth. Analysis by the Nigeria Interbank Settlement Scheme, NIBSS, shows mobile money transactions went up by 14.5% between February and March, a period when the virus was first reported in Nigeria. Mobile money agents like Isaac Oda, whose business has been booming, say the trend has continued to increase since the pandemic.
We are rendering essential services. So our services, it's not something you can do without. Because people transact money, people pay for one or two things. People buy things every day, and then you need money to carry out that transaction. So that is why our services is booming in this pandemic.
As Africa's largest nation, Nigeria is a huge market to mobile money and financial technology operators. But for many years, restrictive government regulatory policies limited investment in this sector. In 2018, Nigeria's central bank relaxed the restrictions with the aim of having 80% of Nigeria's adults use mobile money by 2020. Last December, it issued license to 15 mobile money operators. Financial technology expert Rafael Inuza says the pandemic could fast-track this goal.
There has been a steady growth of increase in the fintech sector and foreign investments. Even way before the coronavirus hit Nigeria, the fintech sector has attracted a whole lot of foreign investment from Visa investing in InterSwitch to Flutterwave to several other fintech companies. But the coronavirus pandemic has accelerated a whole lot, especially in the fintech space, because we now have increased transaction online.
Apart from favorable government policies, the expansion of Nigeria's internet penetration by about 20% in the last 2 years is also enabling the mobile money industry to thrive in the West African nation. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
A Kenyan-based company has developed a video conferencing application, the first made in Africa, designed to be more affordable than foreign counterparts. Gumzo, which means chatting in Swahili, is free to join and costs only $1 per week for users who want to host meetings. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
8 weeks. That's the amount of time it took for the first African-made video conferencing system to be created. Gumzo, which is Swahili for chatting, was made in the offices of Usiku Games, a Nairobi company that until a few months ago focused on making video games for the African market. In the wake of COVID-19, only a small staff routinely reports to the company's office. But that didn't stop Usiku's coders and programmers from quickly developing and rolling out the video conference app. Jay Shapiro, Usiku's CEO, says Gumzo is built to be used on the wide variety of devices used across Africa.
Africa is a mobile-first continent, and so you have to have a platform that works on mobile devices, older, less memory, and so that's why we built something that is not a download app but is web-based and is accessible on all smartphones or PC or tablets to try and reach as many people as we can.
In early March, the Kenyan government closed all learning institutions in a bid to curb the spread of coronavirus. About 17 million students have been kept out of schools since. Teachers have used a variety of conferencing apps, including Zoom, Skype, and WhatsApp to keep in touch with students. Gilbert Walusimbi, a teacher at Upper Hill High School in Nairobi, is one of the users of Gumzo. On average, his video conferencing class has 45 students. Walusimbi likes the fact that he can have an unlimited number of students in meetings and still have clarity because Gumzo's servers are in Kenya and South Africa. However, Walusimbi adds that the digital access to all learners is an issue.
The challenges are where that particular receiver, that is a student, is, because not every area in the country has the infrastructure for receiving this particular type of digital learning material. Electricity is also a challenge in some areas.
Vincent Omondi, an information technology expert at McKinney School in Nairobi, points out that the digital divide in Africa could pose a challenge in the uptake of emerging innovations and technologies.
The latest statistics that we have, 2019, that was conducted by the International Telecommunications Union, 29% of the population in Africa had access to internet. After internet access, there is now the issue of device. The appropriate devices to use to access video conference softwares, that would also play a big challenge.
Although the digital divide in Africa is still quite large, Usiku hopes that Gumzo will help make it smaller. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Africa's Home Affairs Minister has rejected a plea by small political party Al-Jamaa to legalize Muslim marriages during the COVID-19 pandemic, so death certificates will not read never married. As the party's president and leader in parliament, Ganeef Hendricks explains to reporter Vicky Stark that the lack of legal status not only upsets those left behind, but also causes complications with inheritances.
With death knocking on so many doors, Al-Jamaa said it was hoping to bring dignity to those whose marriages, also known as nikahs, are not recognized by the state. Party leader Ganeef Hendricks used his parliamentary privilege to formally ask Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi why they could not legalize these unions.
When they get the body at the hospital and put it in a body bag, it goes into the van, and then all they do is they stop at the house of the deceased, and his widow and children all come and they say a small prayer, and off the body goes to be buried. There's no, they don't go to a mosque or anything to avoid infection. And then all that widow who's married for 40 years to that man has, is a death certificate, to say he died. She hasn't seen him dead. And the death certificate says never married. And that has stunned so many of these Muslim women.
Hendricks says the minister replied that a marriage entered into in terms of Muslim rights is thus far not recognized in South African law.
Muslim women have a right to dignity. When their children are born, the children are illegitimate if they're in a nikah. If their spouse dies, their death certificate says never married. So their dignity is harmed from the cradle to the grave. I mean, that's unacceptable in a democratic South Africa.
Charlene May of the Women's Legal Center is all too familiar with the impact on women in particular. Her organization has been fighting to change this for many years.
The law, the courts don't recognize their marriage. And so they are subjected to whatever informal, non-legal processes are put in place in terms of their religion to deal with the division of estate, if in the instances of divorce, or of course being able to be beneficiaries of deceased estates should their spouses pass on.
In 2018, the centre won a case in the Western Cape High Court which ruled that government must legalise Muslim marriages within 2 years. However, the state challenged that ruling and the appeal may be heard in August. May says the non-recognition comes from the apartheid system that didn't want people of colour to get married. Since 1994, under the African National Congress's rule, changes have been made to legalize African customary marriages, but not religious ones. Hendricks says Minister Motsoaledi is working on an omnibus marriages bill, but the Al-Jamaa leader is worried it could take 4 years to promulgate. May says she is aware of an extensive review of the marriage laws behind the scenes. But will it take as long as 4 years to complete? May points to how quickly laws were passed for COVID-19.
That kind of speaks to political will. We've seen how very fast legislation can move if there's political will driving it.
The Home Affairs Minister's spokesperson, Siya Khoza, wrote that the consultations on the new marriage policy are at an advanced stage and that the target for wrapping it up is next March. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here. Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.